Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, the original personal computer radio show. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. We are heard each Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, on the internet at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and on WBAI-FM, 99.5 on the radio, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, broadcasting atop the Empire State Building. We live stream the WBAI broadcast on WBAI.org. Our website is PCRadioshow.org. Next week, February 8th, we will only be on PRN-FM at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We are preempted on WBAI-FM at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
The first thing I want to go over is that Google is shutting down older versions of Drive, in other words, the G Drive and the G Suite apps. They are shutting this down, the older versions, Drives, Docs, Sheets, and Slides apps beginning March 1st. So what they're asking you to do is go over and upgrade it. On April the 3rd, these older apps will be gone and can't get to it. So if you want to make sure that you have continued service on these with the upgraded version, you got to get to it before March 1st.
Okay, but what has me puzzled, Hank, is when they say the current version of the Drive, I have stuff on G Drive. How do I know whether it's going to be continued or I'm going to lose it? I don't understand.
Well, you know, the surest thing to do is just copy it onto your local storage.
Well, I got an awful lot of stuff up there, a few gigs.
Hey, you got something for free? Don't complain about it.
Well, I'm not complaining if they're withdrawing it, but how do I know if I'm on the drive that they're withdrawing or I'm on the drive that they're keeping?
And I'm saying I don't know, and the surest thing to do is save it yourself so you know you have it one way or the other.
Wait a minute. You are the world's leading authority, and if you don't know, then they don't know.
No, I'm the leading critic on cloud computing.
Well, as you know, years ago I said I don't trust it, and I still don't trust it. And now I've got to go get storage to take down all the stuff that's up there because I'm not sure it's going to stay up there. And if I write to Google to ask them, I get no answer.
You got to remember something. This is for free. So don't complain. I guess you're not complaining. You're quiet now.
I am. You can see the smoke coming out of my ears.
Well, you know, this is not the first time that Google has dropped applications. You know, Picasa, and they had many other applications that come and go. They come up with stuff that's in beta for years. This is how Google operates.
It's interesting. I had some pictures in Picasa that I thought I had downloaded before it disappeared, but I hadn't. I found was even stranger. They were in the Verizon cloud, and I never put them. I didn't even know I had an account in the Verizon cloud. Verizon just put it up there for me.
You know, one of the philosophies that Google has is they give it to you for free. Therefore, they have no liability because it was free.
There's something in the Bible about the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Now, wait a minute. Are you calling Google spiritual and godlike?
That's how they're acting.
Well, if it's for free, you can't complain, Joe.
Yes, I can.
Well, they did send out a notice saying that, please.
I didn't get a notice.
You're hearing it on the Personal Computer Show now. They
have to send me a notice if they're, for example, when they did away with Picasa, they gave me advance notice.
I think, by the way, they did send out a notice, but you don't read your stuff carefully. It's called RTFM.
I get so much stuff. And it's really, I get gigabytes of email on a daily basis.
Joe, we're announcing on the air, so for those who are running G Drive, G Suite apps and so on, go get the upgrade by March 1st.
Whether or not you have already been upgraded or whether or not you already have the latest version, it's a very difficult way for you to find out. You're better off just replacing it with whatever Google is offering. Or take my advice, don't use Google.
Or what was the advice I gave is back it up locally, so at least you have backup. You know, we always talk about backup, and just because it's in the Google Cloud doesn't mean it's been backed up. Just remember that.
That's true. Hank, you're usually more aware of retail prices than I am, but I saw some 1 terabyte drives at very little money out there.
Yes, they really dropped in price. By the way, for those who may be interested in knowing, I've been comparing while watching the drop in price on solid-state drives, and it's about a 10-to-1 ratio now in cost. In other words, if I want a 1 terabyte solid-state drive, it now sells for around about $300.
And what is a hard drive of 1 terabyte?
Between $35 to $37.
So if you go out and buy one for under $50 and you want to put into it the 400 or 500 gigabytes of pictures that you have stored up in the cloud, it's not that expensive.
No, not at all. When we talk about a deadline, there's another deadline that was announced, and I don't know if Microsoft, well, actually, they put out a general notice. I don't know if every user got a notice on it, but it was in the news. Microsoft is on the original version of Windows 10, which was Core Build 1507. They are saying that as of March 26, there will no longer be patches for it. And so, therefore, you have to switch over to this copy or to an updated copy. And the latest copy, the official copy, I think 1607, which was in the summer, the tail end of July, and that was called the anniversary of 10. So,
Hank, I got a problem with that. I just bought a machine from Hewlett-Packard. Mm-hmm. Now, it was in one of their bargain prices, so I'm assuming that it was a little bit older than the ones that are in the stores right now. How do I know that I got that update?
Well, very simple. What you do is you go to Control Panel, go to System, and right there in the middle, it tells you what version, okay? And by the way, if you haven't updated it...
Oh, that leads to a follow-up question.
Wait, hang on, Joe. If you're running version 1507 and you haven't done the update by March 26, it will continue to work, except that there will be no patches or further patches on it. So it's not like it's a drop-dead date. It's not a drop-dead date. It will continue to work, but without...
But I thought it was an automatic update if you had a licensed copy.
No. A lot of people were turning off the update.
You mean the automatic update?
The automatic update. And the reason why people were turning off the automatic update is because the way Microsoft set it up was that as you're running, you could be in the middle of in Word or Excel, or I'm working with Audacity, I'm doing some editing, and all of a sudden it goes into what I call la-la land, where it starts updating and it stops me from doing what I'm doing, and it's very annoying. So what I do is I just turn off the update.
I don't follow that.
In other words, suppose you were working on a spreadsheet, and as you're filling in numbers, all of a sudden it stops working and it goes into Windows Update. And that's called...
Oh, how do you know it stops working and goes into the update?
Let's say you're working with Excel, it stops, and all of a sudden you're in Windows Update because you had the automatic update on.
You mean you get a new window on your screen?
No, not the new window, but whatever updates there were, which could be a new window, okay, or patches.
And then you might have to wait several hours before it goes back to working on your spreadsheet.
Well, not necessarily several hours. I could tell you something that happened. Like, my daughter called me up, and she was in the middle of doing some work, and all of a sudden she goes into the update, and she tries to break into the update because she really got to get that, you know, the job done. And when the update was finished, she calls me up and says, "Dad, the update's finished." I says, "Okay, that's good. But on the desktop, I have no icons." So I talked her through on how to get the icons back.
What happened to the icons during the update?
She interrupted the update.
And so it broke. In other words, the update was not a clean one.
By the way, in her case, what I told her to do was go into C drive. And you have two subdirectories, Program and Programs x86, and just go to each of the subdirectories, like, say, Word or Excel or something like that, and you see, look for the app module, and just copy that out to the desktop, and therefore it starts working. So
I couldn't really follow that, but folks, if it happens to you or me, do what I'm going to do and call Hank or write to Hank, and he'll walk us through it again.
And if I'm busy, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to say, here's Joe King's home phone number.
There you go. That won't help anybody because I don't really know how to do it. But let me say this. If for some reason you have not updated your Windows 10 because you thought it wasn't necessary or whatever the reason was, you can now go back into the control panel and find it, and you can select it to be updated, and it will go out and update for you. But I don't know if that'll work after they cut it off, Hank. Will it?
No. The updates will work. Let me give you a good example where the updates is important, okay? Suppose I am running with, let's say I was one of the early adopters, and I had build number 1507, and you update it to 1607, and all of a sudden, because of whatever might be, and in fact, we do talk about it late in the hour, lightning strikes, and all of a sudden, you got zapped. And what you did was you do a factory reset. The factory reset does not bring you to 1607. It brings you back to what was originally on the hard drive, which is 1507. So when you do a factory reset, it will go through the whole process of building it up, in other words, all those updates are still there, even if you have to go back to it, okay?
When you go do the factory reset, you're saying it leaves the updates, it doesn't go back to factory?
No, that factory reset means that you have two options on the factory reset, is that it will reload the original operating system that came with the system, and it gives you a clean install, or it will give you the clean operating system without anything that you might have added onto it, but it retains your data. It does not modify your data, does not limit your data. So those are the two options you have.
And what's the difference to me of those two options?
Well, if you want to give away your machine to your favorite niece or nephew or anything like that, and you just want to wipe it clean, what you do is you do a factory reset and do not, in other words, do a factory reset where you destroy the data at the same time.
All the data,
and therefore, whoever you give the machine to, it's a clean operating system, it works, but they don't have access to your data.
That's very important, because I'm about to give away a machine, and I didn't realize that.
Yeah, except that you'll have to tell the person that the factory reset is Windows 95.
Is what?
Knowing you, you'll probably give away a machine that's running Windows 95 or Windows 3.1.
No, it's got a legitimate Windows 7 on it.
Oh, okay. By the way, Windows 7 actually still very, it's a lot of people still love it. And, I would say that Windows 7 is, I think, 40% now of the install base. I'll tell you who has a lot of those Windows 7. Those who are running a dedicated application, like every time you go to a hospital or doctor or dentist or something like that, they're running dedicated applications. They're not concerned about whether it's an update or not because they don't go out to the internet. Go ahead.
Hank, I was at a dentist's office about a month ago, and the woman at the front desk was having a minor problem, so I offered to help her with it. And it turned out she was running a vertical program, a proprietary program on Windows XP.
Mm-hmm. And we call that vertical applications, by the way.
And I asked her, when was that mounted? And she said last year.
Mm-hmm.
Some organizations which are selling vertical programs aren't really concerned with the version of the operating system. They're only concerned with their vertical application.
I'll tell you, the two advantages of running a vertical application is that they're really in DOS mode and it runs very fast, and they don't take up all this time requiring more CPU processing power just to give you the GUI effect, That's number one.
Yep.
And number two is this whole bit where they upgrade application, they call it organic. That's a fancy way of saying we'd like to do an update, and, oh, by the way, please upgrade, and there might be a charge. A classic example is Microsoft Office. I would bet you that 80% of the people can continue to use Microsoft Office XP or, one of the early versions. You don't need 2003, 2010, 2013, 365.
I'm still using 2010.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? Oh, and they come up with all these new functions. No one uses it. Well, I shouldn't say no one, but for the majority of the people, it's not necessary.
When I got Windows 2010, I was told by my Microsoft contact that on average, only 80% of the power of the different features are used.
Well,
Windows 10. Well, I probably used about 5% or 10%. because I don't do any of those fancy things. I just need to have a word processor and a calendar, and that's about it.
Well, a lot of journalists are reporting that PC sales are down. Well, you know what? In the old days, you may need to buy a computer every year, like a smartphone. You got to buy a new one every year or every 18 months or 2 years. With the personal computer today, unless something is really new that you need, you don't have to replace it. And it's well built.
There's another thing. Back in the day, I would have a computer, and I'd get as good a computer as I could afford, and I would use it until it stopped working. Today, I have four computers. I have a laptop, I have a desktop, I have a tablet, and I have a smartphone. And those are all computers.
Oh, I think I have more than that. I think
No, you probably have 15 of each.
No.
I look around, I get on the bus, and almost everybody on the bus has a smartphone out. And half the people on the bus have a tablet that they're reading. Mm-hmm. Now, it might be a simple tablet like a Kindle, or it could be a more complex tablet like the Amazon Fire, or a full-blown tablet. But everybody has multiple computers, and they're not in a big rush to update each one of them every year.
Except
you'd be talking about thousands of dollars for no reason.
Now, wait a minute.
Work.
A good smartphone, you're talking about $600-$800, and people are upgrading every year or every 2 years. Why are they doing it?
Well, maybe they're doing it for the reason I'm going to be doing it.
Oh.
I've got a 3-year-old smartphone, and it ain't so smart anymore.
Now, wait a minute. I know you have a Samsung, and the Wall Street Journal is reporting that, Samsung did find the two reasons why the 7 failed in the marketplace, aside from the technical thing. One was that one of the affiliates, that's a nice way of saying it's their subsidiary, not all the batteries was tested to be the exact size it is, because they packed so much in it is that the tolerance level was so tight that some of the batteries didn't make it. And so
this was a battery that gets packed in at the factory and the end user never looks at it.
Well, they can't get to it unless you have special tools, mate.
Right. Now, the reason I have not that Samsung was blowing up in everybody's face, but I have the Note 4, which came out 4 years ago, I think. I've had it now for 2 years, and suddenly things are going wrong. So I thought that perhaps it just needed a factory reset. I copied out all the vital information that I had on it. Then I did a factory reset, and certain things still don't work. For example, I go into do not disturb mode during the night so that the phone doesn't ring and disturb me. When I have it set at 6 o'clock in the morning to go in, take off the do not disturb. But I noticed I wasn't getting any indications, notifications, they call it, from the phone. And so I went in and looked a few weeks ago. And when it comes out of Do Not Disturb, it leaves notifications off constantly. It's reproducible. I found that certain other things turn themselves off, turn themselves on, all by themselves, as if they knew more than I knew. Maybe they do. But I'm not really willing to trust a company that on their newest phone, it blows up. On the oldest phone, it deteriorates to the degree that it becomes lemony.
But Joe, there are two things, though. Samsung did spend a lot of time and effort. I think they had about 600-700 people look into the problem. They've identified. They own up to the problem. And on the preliminary reports on the 8 that is coming out in March, those are outstanding specs. Wouldn't you want to consider possibly waiting until then to see whether it's worthwhile buying Samsung, or you're going to just walk away?
It's the question, do you trust the company? Now, I'll tell you what I did instead. I looked at the specs of everything around, and I decided instead of a Samsung, I was going to switch over to the Pixel Plus. I think it's called the Pixel XL.
Right, it's the Google phone.
It's the Google phone, and it's got wonderful specs, Hank. It's got a good price. So I went into my neighborhood Verizon store, and I went into the O&O, the owned and operated, not one of the franchise stores. And they said, no, they don't have any of those phones, and they really wish that the home office would stop advertising them. They haven't had any since last November, and people keep coming in and taking up the salesman's time saying, when can I have a phone? They're not keeping a waiting list. They're nothing. Just every time you want a phone, give them a call and see if there's any in. But that's not unique for Verizon. I keep seeing ads on television for Fios, but I can't get Fios, and I can't get Google. And I don't know what Verizon is doing these days.
Hey, Joe, I'm going to ask you a loaded question. All right, you got this problem with Samsung. You got this, it's an emotional feeling. You also have this problem with Google. Why don't you get an iPhone?
The question is, you know, my wife has had iPhones ever since, I think, the iPhone 2 or 3.
And your wife is happy with it.
And she's totally happy with it. So I took her phone when she's home for the last week, and I spent a significant amount of time on it. And surprisingly to me, I find that the Android operating system is much more user-friendly than iOS if I'm the user.
Oh, come on, Joe. You're just picky, picky, picky.
I am. If I'm going to be spending close to $1,000, I'm going to be very picky.
Now, wait a minute. If your wife is happy with it, why wouldn't you be happy?
My wife is happy with the dress. I wouldn't want to wear one.
So, what are you going to do? I mean, you know, people are listening to this, and they're going to say, well, what will he get? Because that phone is being held together with Scotch tape and Elmer's glue, and the unit's coming out the end of March. What are you going to do, Joe?
If I knew the answer to that, Henry, I would be a wise man. As it is, I'll make the decision when the phone comes out, and if there's a iPhone 8 coming out, I think it's in September, and there's the Samsung 8 coming out in March, is it, Hank?
March, April, right.
March, April. I'll make the decision at some point when I have to, but this I can tell you, absolute certainty, no question in my mind, I will eventually be unhappy with that phone.
Oh, you know, I was going to say, Joe, no matter what you get, you're still going to be an unhappy camper.
That's what I said. I know that. Everybody says the phone companies or the phone manufacturers that play hopscotch. Every model, one of the phones has a better feature in it, and the next model, everybody copies that feature.
I call that leapfrog.
Well, I have a Note 4 in my hand, and it's got a stylus. At first, I didn't know what it was for, but now I'm going to have a difficulty living without a stylus. But only one other company has come out with styluses. I don't understand why.
Well, I find that every time I get a new bag, the pockets are different, there's a different, and what happens is you learn to live with a new item. You know, we're talking about making changes, and the personal computer sales have dropped, by the way, as reported by IDC and Gartner and so on, is that PC computer sales dropped 5.7% last year. But until you analyze the data, you'd be surprised, because it turns out that the top five manufacturers of a PC is Lenovo, HP, Dell, and ASUS, the first four, they're the leaders. And those four
Apple's no longer in the first four?
Nope. Those four manufacturers last year all had gains. They didn't have any losses in PC sales. They had gains, and they account for more than two-thirds of all PCs sold. That's unusual. And it turns out...
Just those four companies.
Yeah. Now, it turns out Apple sales dropped 10% last year.
How much?
10%, more than 10% last year in sales.
Is that just desktop or is that everything?
It's their MacBook.
It's mainly their MacBook.
Well, when they say PC, they mean desktop and notebooks, because you know, it's 70-80% notebooks now, okay?
But they're not really including the iPhone or the iPad.
No. It's not the tablet and not the phone. But what was interesting was that the other one-third, which includes Apple, and you know how many other manufacturers there are in that one-third number? 200 manufacturers.
Oh, come on.
And you know what? Some of these manufacturers are not some of the names you recognize, okay? Like Toshiba.
That's significant. I have a Toshiba laptop.
Acer.
I have a Acer laptop.
Apple.
I don't have any Apple equipment.
So what it is that the top four manufacturers are all gaining in sales, And then you know what the very popular units are? The two-in-ones. You know, they open up like a clamshell, and if you turn the cover all the way over, it looks like a tablet. And that's what people are buying.
I wonder why.
Why? Because it turns out that it's a convenient form of having something that can fit on top of the desk, or if you want to sit at a sofa and watch TV, you can use it like a tablet.
Is it a touch screen?
Yes. Two-in-one are touch screens.
Then it makes more sense to me, yeah.
And by the way, you could, and many of them, you could use a stylus with it, or what you call a little pointer.
Well, you know, I just bought, I mentioned a Hewlett Packard clamshell. I hate to call it a laptop because it's got a 17-inch monitor, and that doesn't fit on my lap. But it's a clamshell. It does not have a touch screen, and it's got one of those built into it, a touch pad, which you use your finger on. And I found that it's very annoying. I don't know why, but it's very annoying for me to do that. So HP is well aware of that, and they have a wireless mouse. Now, you'd think that since they sell the wireless mouse in conjunction with this particular computer or this line of computers, that it would have Bluetooth built in. It doesn't. So they sell you a dongle.
Well,
it's part of the mouse package.
I recently bought a couple of computers, and included is USB 2.0, 3.0, Bluetooth. The only thing missing on many of these two-in-ones is the optical drive. But all the other features and components and connectors are there. So,
well, I find that you know, if you're going to have one of these two-in-ones, weight is a major factor.
By the way,
and
Joe...
They save weight by cutting out the optical drive.
No,
me, that would be totally unacceptable.
Joe, actually, I'm going to surprise you. I've been looking at some of these units, and many of them are close to only 2 pounds. And you know how they cut the weight? Very simple. Non-interchangeable or removable battery.
Right. That saves a half a pound or thereabouts. Dropping out the optical drive saves a few ounces, probably 4 or 5, and so on. The only people ask me about it, some of my friends, what they should get, and my answer is what you always say. I learned it from you. Figure out what you need and buy that. And if you feel that for storage or for convenience or for anything else, you need to have a DVD, then make sure it's built in. Because if you start having to carry different packages, you need the power brick, and you need the DVD, and you need this, and you need that. Suddenly, the lightweight doesn't matter. It's a pain in the neck, and you won't use it.
Public service announcements. The Westchester PC Users Group will have a presentation on history and technology of rail transport. Thursday, February 2nd, that's tomorrow, at 7 p.m., at the Keller Williams Realty, 120 Bloomingdale Road, on the first floor in White Plains, New York. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey will have a presentation on FBI security this Friday, February 3rd, 8 p.m., Scotch Plains Rescue Squad in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. The Danbury Area Computer Society will have a presentation on online marketing next Tuesday, February 7th, 7:30 p.m., at the Danbury Hospital Auditorium in Danbury, Connecticut. The Computer Learning Center at Ewing will have a presentation on partitioning your hard drive on Tuesday, February the 7th at 2 p.m. in the community room at 999 Lower Ferry Road in Ewing, New Jersey. The New York Amateur Computer Club will be meeting next Thursday, How to Self-Publish eBooks, Audiobooks, and Paperback Books, Thursday, February the 9th at 7 p.m., at NYU, 72 Waverly Place, Silver Building, Room 405. Rockland PC Users Group will be meeting Tuesday, February the 14th, that's Valentine's Day, at 7:15 p.m., Rasser Room on the fourth floor of the Palisades Mall in West Nyack. The Brookdale Computer Users Group will have a presentation on how to purchase and maintain the correct printing equipment for your home or office, Thursday, February the 23rd, at the Middletown Library in Middletown, New Jersey. The Princeton PC User Group will have a presentation on partitioning a hard drive on your Windows computer Tuesday, February the 28th at 7 p.m., Mercer County Library in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. And TCF42, previously known as the Trenton Computer Festival, the original personal computer festival, will be at the College of New Jersey Saturday, March 18th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and the keynote theme of the festival is the autonomous vehicle. I hope to be there, and I hope to see all of you there. Alfred Poor, who attended the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, has more personal biometric tracking devices to talk about, and I'm quite excited to hear about it.
Hello, this is Alfred Poor with news about wearable technology from Health Tech Insider. Welcome back. This is Alfred Poor again, and I've got still more news about things that I saw about wearable technology at CES 2017 in Las Vegas. Got a couple things I want to talk about today. The first one is a new mouth guard that is actually a smart mouth guard. It's got sensors built in, and it's designed to track head impacts. Now, this is really important because blows to the head are essentially the main cause for concussion, and it's a real problem in sports, obviously in contact sports like hockey and American football, but even in so-called non-contact sports, soccer, where players head the ball. It can create all kinds of force from the impact and can lead to damaging the brain. We don't understand a lot about concussions. We know that one big blow can certainly cause problems, but we're not really clear yet on what the cumulative effects are of smaller impacts over time. Obviously, this has been a huge issue for the National Football League, the professional football players, but it's also a big concern for amateur sports, college, high school, younger. So there's a lot of need to gather more information. The problem is, how do you go about accurately measuring this? The NFL has struggled with this. According to one source that I talked to, they actually go through a recreation using dummies on the field and trying to recreate the impact using cameras from a bunch of different angles and trying to retroactively predict what the force might have been. Well, there's a company called Prevent Biometrics that has a new approach to this. One of the problems with other sensors is they put them on the helmets, they put them on the back of the neck, they put them on a headband. The problem with this is that those sensors aren't necessarily tied that closely to the head movement, so they don't accurately measure what's going on. Another problem is that a lot of the times they just use linear sensors. They just measure the forces that happen in a direct line rather than rotational forces as the head spins around an axis. One of the things Prevent Biometrics did was they decided to put their sensors in a mouth guard. This is a standard piece of equipment for most contact sports. It absorbs the impact of the lower jaw slamming into the upper jaw, which in itself can be a problem. But the key thing about putting the sensors in the mouth guard is, first of all, it's not going to slide around when there's a blow to the head because it's molded to the teeth. And as long as the teeth stand still relative to the rest of the head, the mouth guard is going to record more accurate data. And the other thing about it is that they have sensors to measure both the linear forces and the rotational forces. And they do this in all three axes. It gathers a lot of data about the force of the impact, the direction of the force, and all that. You can predefine a set level of impact, and if the mouth guard senses that much of an impact, a red LED in the front of it goes off, so all the teammates can see that that player has had a big hit to the head and can be sent off the playing field to be evaluated by the coaching staff. The mouth guard also communicates wirelessly with a smartphone or tablet app, so the coach and training staff on the sidelines can monitor all the players. It will issue an alert if one player should have an impact greater than a certain limit. They're working with the NFL and other sports. They've done a lot of scientific study about this. They've actually had peer review scientific papers about the performance of their device. They're still in beta test. They're going to be testing it throughout this year, but the hope is that they'll be able to roll it out as a commercial product next year. One interesting thing about it is they're not planning to sell this to individuals. Instead, they're going to sell it to teams and leagues so that everybody on the field will be covered by it. Another important point about this is, while this is going to be a very useful tool for measuring the results for any individual player, at the same time, it's also going to create a larger collection of data about the community of players as a whole, so it will be easier to track what the cumulative effects of head impact might be on cognitive ability and whether there's lasting effects from concussion or smaller injuries. With luck, this will help make sports safer and will help prevent further injury for players. Another product that I saw at CES that was interesting comes from a company called Vayar, V-A-Y-Y-A-R. What they've come up with is a way to transmit and receive radio frequency waves in order to look through opaque surfaces and see what's behind them. Now, the initial focus on this was so that contractors and do-it-yourself homeowners could take a device and do a 3D scan of their wall and see where water pipes are located, where electrical wires are located. So before they start making holes in walls or renovating or remodeling, they can actually see what's behind before they start tearing things apart. Now, that's an interesting product, an interesting application. But how does that relate to wearable technology, especially for health and medical uses? It turns out that it has a lot of other applications. By putting a sensor in a home, it can see through walls, and it can actually register the motion of an individual. It can track people as they move throughout the home. This could have very important applications in terms of aging-in-place technology, allowing seniors to live safely and independently in their own home. It can monitor their activity in the home, see how much exercise they're getting, see that they're moving about. It also can detect falls. If the resident of the home should fall and not be moving, the system would be able to determine that. So that's kind of interesting. But perhaps the most interesting part of all is it is so sensitive, it can actually measure heartbeats and breathing rate. So it would actually be able to monitor the biometric measures of the people in the house. And it can track more than one person at a time. And again, since it's using radio frequency emissions, it can go through walls just like Wi-Fi and television and radio waves do now. So it's a very flexible and very versatile technology. Basically, the company is looking to license its technology, and it's working with partner companies to create products that incorporate the technology into consumer devices. Hopefully, we'll see products come to the market by the end of this year, and this technology could actually replace some of the kinds of wearable devices that people use now. And it would be much more convenient because there's nothing to carry with you. There's nothing to recharge. It would just sit silently in some corner of your home and does its thing. So it's a pretty exciting technology. Looking forward to seeing a whole lot more from this. I've got a lot more to report about things I've seen at CES. So be sure to tune in next week and find out more. For more information, go to healthtechinsider.com. This is Alfred Poor. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Alfred.
You know, Joe, I just want to say that as a general rule, unless it's been announced officially, unless it's you can buy it today, it's, in other words, something that is tangible, we tend to call that vaporware. But sometimes an announcement that is made, and then you look at the source like the Wall Street Journal, and you say, wow, that is some announcement. I don't know how true it is. But apparently what the Wall Street Journal announced was that Verizon has made overtures to buying out Charter.
Well, I'm not sure. First of all, I'm sure the Wall Street Journal has very good reporters and wonderful editorial board. But this is still a rumor.
Yes.
I wouldn't buy or sell stock based on it.
No, no.
It's a more full announcement. Particularly with Verizon, because they announced that they were buying Yahoo for some $4 billion, and then it turned out that Yahoo had a huge amount of problems with stolen data and hacked information. And, there's been a lot of changes in Verizon's office.
Actually, Verizon has officially said they will go through with the deal at $4.8 billion, and the reason for that is because of Alibaba.
I'm waiting for an explanation.
Alibaba stocks went up. So therefore, had a higher valuation.
And how much of Alibaba does Yahoo own?
I think about a third.
Yeah.
So that is
so
that's a big
they're
chunk.
Applying that increase to wiping out the extra debt. I still, if I was a Verizon, I would still think long and hard about the liabilities involved in the previous.
Well, Joe, you're thinking of it as an investor. I'm thinking of it as a user. In other words, you and I live in New York City, and we have two primary vendors. One is Verizon, and the other one is used to be Time Warner. Now it's Charter. And, of course,
you're leaving out the one that I use.
Yeah, but that's so small in terms of volume. You're talking about RCN, okay? Now, one of the complaints that people have had in New York City is hey, why don't you offer me Fios? Because people want Fios, and they're stuck with a slower and lower speed Time Warner. Now, can you imagine if this deal did go through, you think it would be helpful and to the benefit of the people living in New York City?
No. It's still a problem. Verizon promised New York City that they would make almost all of the citizens able to get Fios.
Actually,
they interpreted that as meaning all the streets would have Fios cabling on it.
No. Actually, what they said was lines would be running through the streets. They didn't say it'd be attached to anything.
Right. And I spoke to another lawyer about it, and he said, this is the sort of stuff that gives us lawyers a bad reputation. They fudged the contract so that people in New York City government who were not lawyers didn't realize that you could run the cabling to the building, and that made everybody able to get Fios if, and they didn't put this in writing properly, if that building reached an agreement to be wired by Fios. I would love to have Fios. I know that the wires are right outside my door, outside my building door, because the truck was there, and I asked the driver of the truck, what are you doing? He said, I'm laying Fios cables. I said, right here at my building. He said, absolutely.
Can you imagine, Joe, that Verizon says to New York City, saying, hey, we bought out Charter, and therefore we are in the homes?
Suppose New York City says that they're not going to accept that purchase.
Well, actually, it's not up to the city.
They won't give the franchise over.
No, actually, what's going to be is that what will the Justice Department do? Would they call it anti-competitive, monopolistic?
I'm sure they'll say all of that, but I'm saying that Fios, that Verizon lied about the availability of Fios, in my opinion. In their opinion, they did not lie.
They have some smart lawyers.
I have lost equipment and data because of lightning strikes and electrostatic charges. It is rare, but it does happen. Lately, I've been getting calls from people who have, for some reason, had complete loss of data or access to their hardware. I asked Marty Winston to explain this more fully, only in his most articulate manner.
Hi, it's Marty Winston, the News Tips guy, talking again about the special proof of concept editorial project where we're building a 40-year maintenance-free, energy-miserly, ultra-automated house. But Hank wanted me to revisit a subject we've hit a couple of times recently, and that is lightning. Lightning strikes as a repeated topic here. But it's not reruns, because I'm going to tell you more this time than I did in any of the previous individual times, collecting information beyond what you may have. And let me start by dealing with a visualization of one of the factors in lightning that's useful, and that is the electrostatic nature of invisible blobs of air, amorphous, really unpredictable shapes, unpredictable motion all around the house all the time. And each blob, recognizing each blob, is identified by a particular electrostatic charge. If you've ever zapped your finger on a door or a window or a doorknob, piece of metal, radiator, if you've ever had that spark happen, you know that when electrostatic charge levels get very different, a spark will jump a gap. Lightning is one such spark. A spark will jump a gap to equalize those charge levels, or at least to address the difference in those charge levels. And earlier I spoke about how lightning protection, and this is just only one facet, which is why we're revisiting it, lightning protection sticks a needle in that to let some of the charge out. It's one of the ways that lightning protection can work. The Franklin lightning rod, now called an air terminal, is a sticky up metal thing with a point on it. And that point means that it can start dissipating energy at lower levels, and the rod means it can dissipate a great deal of energy. And when you've dissipated the energy in the air blob, you've done a lot to stop lightning from happening, but you have not done it all. Not by a shot. Not by a shot. Gee, a lightning shot. Hadn't thought of that. There's also a similar factor on everything else that the air is touching, on roofs, on walls, on trees, on poles. And usually this is along their skin, if I can use that word. Skins of things, outer surfaces of things, also have implicitly electrostatic charges, and they are just as culpable as those air blobs themselves at having differences foment sparks as small as a thing in the living room or as big as kaboom in the sky. Those sparks that cause lightning can be caused by differences in electrostatic potential, which is, if you'll remember it, something to do with voltage, okay? Now, what does lightning protection on a house do? And I've said before, and this is misleading, I said a good lightning protection system isn't about providing a lower resistance path to ground for the lightning. And actually, that is something it has to do. It's just not the only something. If you've ever had lightning hit nearby, if you've had lightning go down a lightning rod at your house, and if you've been near the wire that conducted it, that thing is hot as heck. That really, really can heat up. You have that much voltage, you have that much current. There's no such thing as a conductor with little enough resistance that it won't heat up as a lightning path. But it's survivable if you have a big enough wire. So one of the important walkaways from this little discussion is if you've got a lightning protection system, make sure not only that you have a large diameter wire, but that it is something you've looked at recently to know that it's still doing an effective job of conducting. Copper braided wire is one of your best choices, but the 10 gauge wire that's used in grounding electrical devices is also pretty good. That said, don't ever have just one. I spoke to a friend who's a first phone. Some of you know that that means he's a radio station chief engineer, and this particular guy has worked for a lot of stations in one of the major markets. And he tells me when he's lightning conditioning a building, they do the following. They put a copper conductor all around the roof of the building. They put a copper conductor all the way around the base of the building. They connect those copper conductors at many places vertically down the building. And those copper conductors that are connected at the top to various kinds of electrostatic charge dissipation things, including Franklin rods and some things that look like pincushions and some other stuff. But it goes not to one lightning rod in the ground. It goes to lightning rods all around. He goes beyond that. You could be very, very good just taking, I mean, a lot of people have a 4 foot or a 6 foot lightning rod. That's kind of just barely okay. A lot of people, and this is smarter, we'll put two of those end to end and pound that down 8 feet or so. Some people, and this is what he did, also put in radials. That's a connected horizontal line. In his case, for radio station transmitter, those lines run underneath parking lots and out into fields. It can be a quarter mile to a mile long in some cases because a radio station needs a good ground wave. It's also part of lightning protection. Gee, does that work together? Yeah, for a radio station. For your home, if you're in an apartment, be careful about trusting the copper water pipes. They may or may not present a good ground. If they do, fine. Good luck. If they don't, address it. Address it with an electrician. It's a very, very good starting point. Speaking of electricians, there's the other part of lightning that we need to discuss, and that is what happens to all your stuff when lightning hits? How much of it fries, and how do you keep that from happening? One of the sad truths today is that more lightning damage, well, not more, there is a lot of lightning damage that happens to neighbors as a result of lightning strikes that are not on your property. It comes in the back door. It comes in signal lines. It comes in your phone connection. It comes in your TV connection. It comes in your internet connection. Those connections that come into your house do not have any immunity to the electromagnetic pulse surge that gets imposed on them when lightning strikes. Vulnerable, huh? How are you feeling now? My particular solution to that, now my favorite, and I've said this before, is cyber power. Cyber power backup power systems have built-in power line surge protection for the things you plug into them, but they also have pass-through RJ45 and coax connectors. Also, you can plug in RJ11 or 12 into the RJ45. Let's interpret. RJ45 meaning Ethernet, RJ11 and 12 meaning 1 and 2 line phone. Okay? Those surge protected ports, the pass-through ports, shut that back door on lightning surge problems. It'd keep a lot of stuff from getting fried. Now, you're not going to put one of these on everything you ever plug in everywhere because, among other things, you're human. You're not going to remember it all. Let's be obvious about this. So what about a way to protect the whole house? I mentioned this when I talked about the Builder's Show. Eaton, E-A-T-O-N, also Thomas and Betts, and maybe some others, have whole house surge protection that goes either into or outside the breaker box. Now, what that has in common with simple surge-protected outlet strips, what that has in common with surge protection in a UPS, all of those today are using one technology, the metal oxide varistor, or MOV. And all you need to know is the higher the voltage, the higher the resistance for that device, which is how it can cut things off if lightning or other surges hit. However, those things don't always survive. They're sacrificial, called sacrificial components. Power will still pass, but that sacrificial component may no longer be viable as a way to stop surges. Most surge protection devices have a little light on them to tell you if the MOV is still good or not. Take a minute when you're done with this show to go around the house and check them out. If those MOVs are dead, hey, just go replace them. And remember, because no power line is ever completely clean, there's this constant sandpapering, kind of the emery board effect, that is eating away at the remaining life in those MOVs. So absolutely, if it's more than 5 to 7 years old, don't even think about it. Just replace it. If it's less than that, take a look at it. Take a look and determine whether or not you think, safety first, you want to protect your stuff a little better at that outlet. MOVs. One of the things I saw at Eaton's booth at the Builder's Show is a duplex power outlet with a removable, replaceable MOV cartridge in it. I like that, and you may want to look at it. If you're comfortable working around electricity, it's a do-it-yourself item. I'm sure you can find it online. If not, again, ask your electrician. Inside the breaker box, I absolutely recommend deal with an electrician. They're happy to work with you. You just might not get, because it's not an emergency, you might not get the appointment tomorrow. It might be a couple of weeks. It'll be worth it. Start now. The rainy season is ahead. You know what I'm saying? Lightning. You don't want it to hit you, right? This is the News Tips guy, Marty Winston, and back to you.
Thank you, Marty. Next week, February 8th, we will only be on PRN-FM at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We are preempted on WBAI-FM at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We thank John Collins and Bob Straley for their technical assistance. This broadcast was prepared at the facilities of Queens Public Television. The website for the Personal Computer Show is pcradioshow.org, and we communicate via Twitter at pcradio212. We can be heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm on the Internet and at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI-FM 99.5 New York on the radio or wbai.org streaming on the Internet. In the meantime, stay in touch. And keep on computing and back up, back up, and back up. I'm Hank Key, And on behalf of Joe King and Michael Horowitz, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay warm until we meet again, same time, same station, next week.